Wide exams?
I don't know what you're talking about.
She'd made sure the leopards never heard about it as well. Being good in the ring with the bullwhip and gymnastics was about as much talent as she'd let show. Selena leaned forward a bit. Acing tests doesn't win fights. Another laugh, this one low and sultry.
You know, if your frequent absences didn't bar you from graduating this year, you might have been able to have your pick of scholarships.
College wasn't a possibility, not with Maggie to look after.
This school of mine, though,
Talia said, tracing a nail over the surface of the file, like a long, red talon.
It would be a new start,
and a better fit than juvie
or prison.
With every passing minute she spent in here, Maggie was in that disgusting home, breathing in filth and dirt.
The catch, before you ask, is that my school is located in the Dolomites of Italy, and your sister cannot come.
Selena blinked, processing what the woman had said. A school in Italy. No Maggie.
If you come with me, Talia went on, I can make this record.
A tap of the hand on the file.
Vanish. Forever.
Selena studied the file, and then Talia's beautiful face. These offers didn't come without major strings.
I don't give a shit about the record,
Selena said. I want Maggie out of that house. Talia blinked, the only sign of surprise.
I want my sister put in a single-family foster home with good people who are willing to adopt her. Somewhere in a cushy suburb. No gangs, no violence, no drugs.
Silence. Selena added softly,
and I want you to make sure my mother is never able to get her hands on Maggie again.
The lights above hummed. Talia's hand scraped over the rough surface of the file folder as she slid her hands into her lap.
You're in no position to make demands.
Selena leaned back in her chair, refusing to break the woman's dark gaze.
If you want me so badly for your human trafficking club, you'll do it.
Talia burst out laughing. There was no joy in the sound. Selena rolled her shoulders and waited. Talia chuckled once more before tossing her sheet of hair over a shoulder.
I'll make it happen.
Selena didn't let her shock show.
There is one more condition, Talia said, rising from the table.
Of course there was. Selena monitored her every breath.
We leave tonight, Talia said, and you will not get to say goodbye.
For a moment, Selena didn't hear the words, or the hum of the lights, or the click of Talia's beige heels as she strutted for the door. She heard that damned carousel song. And Selena was still hearing it as she said, voice thick,
take off the cuffs.
The tarmac of the private airport was empty. Empty, save for the sleek white jet idling just off the runway, its steps already lowered to reveal a near-glowing wooden interior. The perfect match to the Aston Martin that Selena had just vacated. Talia was already striding toward the plane. Rubbing her wrists, Selena stalked after the woman, glancing toward the glittering city skyline to their left. The eastern horizon was just beginning to lighten. Dawn. Her body ached. Everything ached, not just bone and flesh. Selena shoved down the thought as she took in Gotham City, the light and the shadow. A cool wind whipped at her face, dragging strands of her hair free as she caught up to Talia's side just before the woman began to ascend the steps into the private plane. A flight attendant waited at the top of the stairs, a tray with two glasses of champagne fizzing in her hands.
Is this your plane?
Selena asked as Talia braced a hand on the stair rail and set a well-heeled foot on the first step.
It is.
This school, then. Selena again glanced toward the city's horizon, to where she prayed Maggie was being shuttled through the streets to the trees and open air and quiet of the suburbs. She swallowed, trailing Talia up the narrow steps of the plane, the private plane.
Are you a Wayne or something? The Waynes did plenty of charity work, and a fancy Italian school for wayward young women didn't seem beyond them. Talia let out a low laugh and didn't bother to turn as she reached the top stair, swiped a flute of champagne from the flight attendant, and said, "No, my family name is Al Ghul." 2 years later. Chapter 3. She was a ghost, a wraith. Selena reminded herself of that little fact as she stood atop the stairs of the private jet, squinted into the blinding midday sun glinting off the hangars of the exclusive airfield, and got a faceful of late August Gotham City stink. That, at least, hadn't changed in the past 2 years. But as for Selena herself, the 4-inch beige heels that clipped so nicely against the steps as she descended were just the start of the changes to her. The long golden blonde hair, the manicured nails, and the sun-tanned skin were the next. And then there was the perfectly tailored cream-colored linen suit, steamed for her by the flight attendant 30 minutes before landing, the portrait of unthreatening, carefree money. No sign of the girl who descended the stairs of this plane 2 years ago, bloody and battered. No sign of the girl who'd clawed and fought to keep her sister safe, keep her as healthy as could be expected, especially with Maggie, now well cared for, living in a pretty house in the suburbs. No sign of that girl at all. Indeed, the resources of the League of Assassins had made these first steps back into Gotham City so much easier, clearing a path for all she'd arrived here to do. The League was bigger, more lethal than any criminal organization in this city, a near myth. They answered to nobody and nothing, a veritable force of nature. Their goals were so much larger than financial profit. No, the League dealt in power, the sort that could alter countries, alter the world. The smart criminals were the ones who got out of their way. The smartest were those who bowed. Selena took a slow, bracing breath, flexing her fingers against the slight tremor that rippled down them. No space for fear, for doubt, for hesitation. Not with so many eyes watching. Photographers sporting long-range cameras snapped photos through the nearby chain-link fence. Selena shoved away any lingering trace of nerves and offered a sultry, sly look in their direction, her broad-brimmed black hat, the crowning piece of her ensemble, blocking half her face. She did the photographers an even bigger favor and removed her sunglasses as she stepped off the stairs and turned toward the awaiting black sedan. And just because she was finally back in this shithole city, finally back in this place that had been both hell and home, she flashed them a wave and a smile white and bright enough to light up the Gotham City skyline. Snap, shutter, snap. Had those photographers even thought to question the anonymous tip about socialite Holly Vanderhees coming to town after a lengthy stay in Europe? Or were they too afraid of looking foolish to ask who this person was who'd just descended upon Gotham City? The information she'd leaked through their computer systems had been brief but detailed. Her family had investments everywhere. Old money. Parents? Deceased. Siblings? None. Net worth? Billions. Selena reached the sedan and the driver holding the door open for her. It took years of training to hold back her nod of thanks, to make herself ignore the urge to meet his eyes in a minimal greeting. He didn't dare introduce himself, didn't do anything. Well trained not to be a presence, but an instrument. Even now, after all she'd been taught and instructed to do, it made her stomach churn. A lie. This is all a lie. The East End bred me, raised me. The words sat on her tongue as she ducked into the car. This is all a lie. But she didn't need to speak a word to him. He already had the address of the old Gotham City penthouse Holly had leased for the as-yet-unknown length of her stay. Likely through gala season, she'd informed the real estate agent, who'd nearly fainted at the commission of a lifetime. Butter-soft leather cushioned her when she slid into the rear seat of the car, the driver making sure her waxed golden legs were fully inside, Birkin bag nestled in the seat beside her, before quietly shutting the door. Air at 70 degrees, two chilled bottles of water in the lowered tray beside her, a smart tablet anchored to the back of the front passenger seat, packets of lemon-scented face towelettes tucked into the mesh netting beneath. Not that she'd use them. Why ruin the makeup she'd carefully applied before landing? The barely there foundation, matte dove gray eyeshadow with a swoop of eyeliner and bold flamethrower red lips. She'd refused to acknowledge the slight trembling in her hands while she'd done it, the hands she'd had to shake out multiple times before they were steady enough to precisely apply her eyeliner and lipstick. Being nervous before a mission didn't help anything. She reminded herself of that over and over, even if she'd already gone through every breathing technique she'd been taught. The driver got in, turning on the radio to the station she'd requested, classical. As a soon-to-be patron of the Gotham City Opera, she at least had to appear interested in it. Appear to be many things, since the driver was sure to talk. Just as the flight attendants on the plane were sure to talk. Money bought nearly everything, but silence was never a guarantee. In Gotham City, loyalty was bought and sold as fast as any stock on the market. Loyalty couldn't exist in a place like this. She'd learned that, too, these past few years. The car pulled out of the private airport, the heavy gates parting to let them through. Selena stroked a hand down the silky smooth leather of the Birkin beside her. The bag, the shoes, the clothes, the jewels, all were loaded symbols. Literally. And also passports, veritable golden tickets into the circles of society who dwelled above those eking out a living on the streets of Gotham City. Nature is all about balance. Nissa Al Ghul, her mentor and personal instructor during her time in Italy, had once purred to her. Tip too far in one direction, and it will always find a way to right itself. Gotham City had been tipping too far toward the rich and corrupt for a long, long time. She'd come home to right it once more. The car wove through a grid of streets before merging onto the highway that would cross the Gotham River and take them downtown. As they sped over the Brown Bridge, the southern tip of Gotham City spread before her, packed with the glittering high-rises that pierced the cloudless summer day like lances, and lording above them all, Wayne Tower. Every citizen of the city could likely sketch the building from memory, a symbol of welcome, the postcards claimed. That tower was a symbol of anything but. And when she was finished here, the world would see that too. She peered out through the gaps in the steel beams of the bridge toward the muddy blue waters of the Gotham River. How many bodies would be swimming in it by the time she was finished here? Gotham City was primed to fall. All it would take was a little encouragement. What fortunate timing that the sanctimonious Batman was currently gone, no sign of him for weeks now, and that Batwing, along with a few others, was barely holding back the tide of lowlifes seeking to take advantage of that absence. She snorted softly. What ridiculous names they gave themselves, these vigilantes. Selena lifted her gaze from the river to the shining metropolis approaching with every heartbeat. To the darker, shorter buildings of the East End smudging the horizon. Home. Or it had been. She hadn't let herself consider it her home in a long while, refused to contemplate where home might be if such a thing could ever exist for her now. The brutal training at the League of Assassins had taught her many, many things, had killed that street-raised, desperate girl, leaving her somewhere at the bottom of a ravine in the Dolomites. Had drained that girl away into nothing, along with the blood of the men who Nissa and the others had taught her how to bring down, how to punish.
You will bring empires to their knees,
Nissa had once sworn to her after a particularly grueling demonstration on how to get men to talk, a kernel of promise while she'd puked her guts up afterward. No, home did not exist anymore. But it was worth it. She'd come here to make sure it had all been worth it. The training, the unspeakable cost. She would not fail. Not this most vital mission. So Selena loosed a settling breath and beheld the sparkling city as she reclined in the cushioned seat of the car. And finally, at long last, she allowed herself a little smile. Let Gotham City enjoy its final days of summer. Chapter 4. The nightmare was always the same. Blinding sun, heat so dry it choked the air out of his lungs, and a flat plain of sand and scrub spreading to the horizon. And then the roar, the screaming, the exploding sand and metal, the blood and chaos, gunfire. A world away, a different world, different life, a different hell. Because for Luke Fox, hell wasn't fire and brimstone. It was friends he'd laughed with in the morning at the canteen, winding up in body bags by lunch. Night after night, this dream, this moment. A year had passed since he'd returned to Gotham City, and Luke was still crawling back toward who he'd been before. Whoever that person had been, whoever had been ripped apart that day, along with the flesh of his ribs where the Kevlar hadn't been covering him. As if the enemy they'd been dispatched to put down had known precisely where to strike with the IED that went off beneath the tank lumbering ahead, sending shrapnel tearing through the air. Through him and his soldiers. Had it been worth it? The grueling training and the 3 years in the Marine Corps? Had he made a difference? They were the questions he asked himself over and over, that haunted every step, every breath, the questions that drove him each night into the streets of Gotham City. Luke blew out a breath, his muscled chest rising and falling as moonlight leaked in through the windows, highlighting the jagged line along his ribs, the scar stark against his brown skin. He scanned the sky, his penthouse apartment offering an unobstructed view of downtown Gotham City. No bat-shaped sigil lighting up the night. Luke couldn't decide if he was disappointed or not. He glanced at the clock beside his bed. Only 2 hours ago, he'd crept back into his apartment after a quiet night of patrolling. Apparently, the August heat had made even the worst of Gotham City decide to stay indoors. Luke snorted, imagining some of the usual suspects opting to seek out an air-conditioned movie theater instead of terrorizing the streets. At least he still had a sense of humor. Sort of. Bruce Wayne didn't have one, or hadn't revealed one in the months Luke had been training with him. It had been his dad's idea. Right after the family's annual 4th of July fireworks barbecue at the beach house last summer. After the incident. Luke had been standing among the crowd gathered on the back lawn, beer in hand, when the fireworks had exploded over their private beach, as they'd done every summer that he could remember. But unlike all those summers before, as those initial fireworks bloomed and boomed in the dark sky, his body had gone absolutely haywire, as if it had been programmed like one of his gadgets. He'd been unable to get a breath down, to control the undiluted terror that swept through him, pushed in on him, as if the ground were about to swallow him up, as if he were again in that blood-soaked desert, and his nightmare was all playing out again. His first full-blown panic attack, in the middle of his family's annual party. Bruce had been standing next to him when it happened, and had instantly noticed the symptoms and gotten Luke's father to help discreetly escort his son back into the house. When he'd finally been able to breathe, when the world had crept back in and the desert had faded away once more, it had all come spilling out. He hadn't been able to save them, his team. He told them he had no idea if he'd made a difference that day or any day in his life. His father and Bruce had sat with him, just listening, like they had nowhere else to be. The subsequent diagnosis? Post-traumatic stress disorder, triggered that particular night by the crackle and boom of the fireworks, by the flashing lights. And then the treatment. Group therapy once a week and private sessions every 3 days. That was fine. That was good.
necessary, vital. But his dad's suggested treatment had been just between him and Bruce and Luke, a visit to Wayne Manor a week later, to a secret chamber beneath it. If Luke wanted to make a difference, Bruce had said, perhaps there was something he could do about it. Luke had learned a lot in the 13 months since, about himself, about what haunted him, and about the man who lived in Wayne Manor. Giving up on sleep, Luke swung his legs out of the bed and padded onto the balcony. Even at 4 in the morning, the air hung hot and sticky against his skin. He again scanned the city, listening for sirens. Anything to call him out of bed, out of his penthouse apartment. Anything to do in these final few hours before dawn when he knew sleep would no longer come. Nothing. Only muggy heat and silence. Even the stars seemed small and faded, the constellations he recognized as well as family members blurred under the blanket of heat. Their names rattled through his head, more instinct than intentional thought. Lyra, Sagittarius, Hercules. Luke rubbed a hand over his short hair. He'd let the sides grow in a bit, but still kept it military short. Movement to his left caught his eye. Every sense went on alert as his body slipped into a loose fighting stance. Being 30 floors up wouldn't keep the more creative criminals from finding their way here to loot the troves of one of Gotham City's richest. A flash of gold at the corner of his balcony. No, not his balcony, but the edge of the balcony for the penthouse that shared this top floor, the corner of which was just barely visible from where he stood, along with the source of that gold, long blonde hair, slightly curled at the ends. There were only two apartments up here. The other had been sitting empty for months. Until yesterday, he remembered. The apartment had been leased by some socialite. Old money, the gossip site said when he'd checked them in the evening for any hint of trouble ahead. Holly Vanderhees. Luke peered over the rail, craning his neck to see more of the owner of that luxurious blonde hair he could just barely make out. A neighbor was an inconvenience. He should have bought the apartment next door just to keep it empty. A stupid mistake. A rookie mistake. He'd have to be careful now, coming in and out of the apartment. Might have to account for his odd hours if she was a snoop, especially if she was a gossip. Most socialites were. He'd developed a healthy respect for them. He'd seen socialites take each other down with words and rumors far more efficiently than insurgents had with bullets and IEDs. His new neighbor vanished along the wraparound balcony, as if she'd been pacing it. First night in a new city. Perhaps she hadn't been able to sleep either. For a heartbeat, he debated crossing the small hallway they shared and knocking on her door, introducing himself. But he couldn't afford another mistake. Building bonds invited questions, and if Holly Vanderhees had no idea who she was living next to, if she never saw or heard from him, so much the better. Easier to be unaccounted for. He didn't know how Bruce did it, juggling the man the world believed they knew with the vigilante who fought to keep Gotham City safe. Luke had asked him throughout their training, but Bruce hadn't been forthcoming. It was one of the few things Bruce hadn't taught him. Luke had known plenty about fighting, about building clever, useful things before they'd begun. Even before enlisting in the Marines, he'd been as keen on honing his body as he was on sharpening his mind. A rare combination, his mom often said, beaming at him. Brains and beauty. Luke always laughed at her, waving her off. Even if the brains part was officially true. He'd been declared a genius before finishing high school. A lot of good that had done him overseas. He certainly wasn't doing much with it these days, as the millionaire playboy the world believed him to be. Son of Lucius Fox, the CEO of Wayne Industries, granted a cushy job in applied sciences at the company. What the job actually did was allow Luke to roll into Wayne Tower, go down to the restricted sub-level 7, and mess around with his suit, his gear, his various gadgets that helped him round up Gotham City's worst. Luke sometimes even modified Bruce's gear, since his colleague was always game for a new upgrade. They'd bonded over it, their interest in tech. Watery gray light began to bleed into the eastern horizon. He had another boxing match tonight. He'd make sure not to mention it to his mother at brunch in a few hours. "You shave years of my life with every match," she complained to him and his dad.
"It's only semi-professional,"
his dad often said, coming to his defense, knowing that the boxing, which Luke had done for years before he shipped out, had always steadied him, settled his mind, and in the years since he'd returned, he'd picked it up again, as part of his ongoing, endless recovery. But only semi-pro, as his dad said, as was befitting a socialite of Gotham City, even if he didn't lose. Ever. Not a single fight. What his mom didn't know, what she couldn't know despite how much he wanted to tell her, was that he and his dad had decided the fights would not only balance him, but help explain away any injuries that might arise during his nocturnal activities, his real job, Batwing. He'd come up with the name himself, in part to honor the training he'd done with Bruce, but mostly as a nod to his favorite part of the suit, the part he'd worked the hardest on and got one hell of a kick out of surprising lowlifes with. Nothing like a pair of retractable wings capable of gliding over long distances to make criminals wet themselves, and to land easily on the roof before slipping back inside the building, a task that would now be infinitely harder with his new neighbor. Luke frowned toward Holly's balcony before turning back inside and sealing the door shut, the AC instantly icy against his skin. He'd figure out some way to make sure she thought he was as boring as possible. Luke headed into his closet, lights flickering on automatically. He glanced to the wood panel that held a full-length mirror. A hidden touchpad would reveal the extra closet concealed behind it, chock full of his various mechanized suits, weapons, and gear. But he opted for gym shorts and an old Marine's tee, sliding on his worn sneakers before striding from the room. A full-service gym was open 24/7, a level below. It'd be empty at this time of the night. Day, whatever 4:30 a.m. was classified as. Luke caught a glimpse of himself in the mirror as he left. His skin was still shiny with sweat, his cheeks a bit hollowed out. His mom would worry at brunch. She was too damn smart not to note everything, especially if he didn't get rid of the empty, glazed look in his eyes. A year, and it was still there. A year of trying to adjust to civilian life and managing his PTSD so that he could finally do something of value to keep this city from falling into ruin, to honor the good men and women who hadn't returned home, at least not outside of a pine box, and the families they'd left behind. Luke shouldered his way through the gym door, the fluorescent lights aclang to his senses, all the TV screens above the machines set to various news channels. Even they were full of nothing, filler stories, because the truth of the world, that didn't sell ad space. And Americans watching didn't really want to have their oversized houses and wasteful lifestyles called into question when faced with the poverty most of the planet lived in, the despair, the ugliness of it. Hell, they couldn't even stand to look too long at the East End in their own damn city. His mom knew that, fought against that every day. He supposed his mom's ball gowns and well-tailored suits were another kind of armor, that she, too, had masks she used to fight against the injustices of the world, especially as a black woman in the upper echelon of society. He wished he could tell her that. Wished he could explain that he was honored to follow in her footsteps, even if the fighting they did each night was different. Hers took place at galas and in boardrooms, winning over Gotham City's richest to contribute to her charities with that charm and wit of hers. His fights, beyond those in the ring, were in places few dared to venture. Luke picked a treadmill that enabled him to see anyone who entered the gym. Another lesson from Bruce, always be on guard, and climbed on, punching in his preferred speed and incline. His body was a tool, a weapon, the same as any he'd fought with overseas. And even as Luke launched into a run, even as sweat again slid down his body and his lungs burned in his broad chest,
He still couldn't feel it. Himself. As if his skin, his bones, were as distant as the high-tech suit he donned every night. The sun began to rise over Gotham City, the wall of windows offering an unparalleled view of the city skyline. Another day. He'd make it count. For the friends who hadn't made it home. For the people living in this city. He'd make it count. Chapter 5. Silence lay heavy throughout the Museum of Antiquities. In the darkest hours of the night, the quiet that permeated the marble chambers was as tangible as the muggy heat outside the sprawling complex. Only the occasional whisper of the air conditioner or the jingle of a drowsy guard's keys provided any interruption. Certainly not Selena. Her black boots didn't so much as scuff against the white floors as she crept through the wings and halls of the behemoth building, her helmet providing a steady read of the tangle of alarm sensors. It was a puzzle, and not a particularly clever one. Her helmet's scanner gave her a constant stream of information, tailored to her specifics. The helmet's ears, the overly large eyes. She'd taken one of the standard helmets, death masks, they called them, that the League of Assassins gave to all their acolytes, and modified it. Kitten, they'd taunted her. Kitty cat. Acolytes and assassins alike whispered and hissed and growled it during training sessions, in the eating hall, down the walkways. One look at the spots inked on her arms, and the taunts had begun. Her fists had done the talking at first, though all it had earned her was Nissa's disdain. Control is vital. Control is everything. So Selena had taken control. Of the taunts, the hated nickname. All while improving her death mask, tinkering through the quietest hours of the night deep in the science labs of the sanctuary. She'd shocked herself a few times, sliced up her fingers while cutting the wires, but in the end, Nissa had given her a rare smile of approval when Selena had come to training one day wearing her modified helmet, the audio receptors shaped like cat ears, the large eyes, and the dagger-sharp claws at the tips of her black climbing gloves. The taunting had stopped after that, especially when she'd ripped open the side of Tigress, one of Nissa and Talia's fiercest assassins and trainers, and settled things between them. And that was before Nissa had started letting her officially train with the bullwhip. Head to toe in black, her breathing barely elevated, Selena paused before the entrance to the famed Egyptian wing and surveyed the labyrinth of shimmering lasers. It was outright cliché, the web of lasers nearly invisible to the naked eye. Without the helmet, she might have resorted to an aerosol to reveal them. Even more cliché. Yet, despite the helmet's map of the various pitfalls and suggested routes, Selena found herself studying the lasers, gauging the angles, the landing space, the possible disasters. The relic was displayed only 50 feet away. A straight shot down the arched marble corridor. Even at night, the small bronze cat statue was lit up in stunning relief. Tribute to Bastet, the feline-headed goddess of warriors, protector of children and cats. No larger than a bottle of shampoo, the 3,200-year-old statue was in flawless condition. That, along with the gems embedded in its collar, made it nearly priceless. Nearly priceless. Someone had, in fact, slapped a price on it. A price that made Selena smile beneath her helmet and begin. Setting her weight onto her left leg, she lifted her right and eased it through the largest gap between the shimmering sensors. Balance was key. The beam had been her best and favorite event in gymnastics. She had no idea why. Most of her teammates had dreaded it, feared it. She'd sometimes wondered if that fear had been a poison, making their balance worse. Selena eased the rest of her body through the initial gap between the sensors, landing in a small island of open air. She'd tucked her bullwhip in tightly for this heist, had triple-checked that it wouldn't fall loose from its place at her left hip while she moved. The guards didn't rotate into this wing for another 10 minutes. It was all the time she needed, especially when she'd taken the liberty of jamming the camera signals with a simple computer error, contact provider message. One with a fake phone number that would keep the guards on hold for a good 15 minutes. Arching smoothly into a bridge over the next sensor beam, the world tilted upside down for a heartbeat as her gloved hands met the marble floor. A push of her legs and pull of her abdominal muscles had her feet rising up and over, her landing as smooth as silk. A dance. These movements felt like a dance. One she'd learned to enjoy. Just as she'd enjoyed taking that diamond from the Gotham Museum 3 days ago, and that trove of jewels from a shop 5 days before that. Little dances, little tests. Tonight would be another step, a bigger one. Considering those two burglaries had proved disappointing. Sure, she'd made off with what she needed, but no one had even put up a fight, a challenge, and no one had come looking for her afterward. Selena slid to the marble floor, slipping beneath a low-hanging beam. She'd make sure tonight was different. A larger expanse of space opened before her, leading to a more intricate web of sensors, the last stretch before the statue's glass display case in the center of the hallway. She could make it with a few careful dips and ducks, but where was the fun in that? She'd been devoid of fun for most of her life, had found it only in rare moments, and even then it had been overshadowed with fear and dread. But tonight? She'd learned to take the things she wanted, including her own amusement. Sucking in a breath, again checking that the bullwhip was secure, Selena launched herself forward. The motions were muscle memory, the calculations sharp and precise. Glorious. Front handspring into a twisting backflip, followed by a high-soaring tuck right into a somersault that sent her into a neat tumble over the final alarm sensor, and right up to the glass of the case. Breathing loud beneath her helmet, Selena grinned at the Bastet statue. She could have sworn that ancient bit of bronze seemed to smile back, seemed to say, "Go on, take it." So Selena did. A claw of reinforced steel slid free from her black glove, perfectly honed, perfectly ready to slice a circle through the thick glass. Selena caught the panel of glass in one palm as her other hand slid into the case and wrapped around the figure. And just as she'd planned, the alarms began blaring. Selena was gone before the GCPD arrived, but she was not done. The Bastet statue tucked into a satchel at her side, Selena knelt at the edge of a high-rise rooftop and adjusted the focus on the scope of her rifle. She didn't use guns on people. Ever. She'd allowed Nyssa to teach her how to wield them, but she'd kept her thoughts on the matter to herself, never mentioned how she'd seen them used to such detrimental effect and destruction, how she'd seen them bring such pain and sorrow into the lives of those in the East End. So it was a good thing Nyssa wasn't here. And a good thing Selena had so many other weapons in her arsenal. But for this task, Selena counted down the seconds, knew it was coming. Her finger shifted slightly on the trigger as she aimed the rifle at the top of the 11-story GCPD precinct building, the most important building in this city, by her account. The door to the precinct roof flung open, and two men rushed out. Selena allowed them to get close to the object they sought, the giant spotlight. She allowed them to turn it on, the beam of light spearing into the sky, the bat icon dark against the bank of clouds. She allowed them that one moment of calm before she fired. The rifle's kickback was a punch to the shoulder, but the shot was a whisper thanks to the silencer. The crack of shattering glass and metal and the shouts of the two officers were not. Selena fired again, a heartbeat later, her careful planning and the scope's night vision allowing the bullet to fly perfectly. The glowing power source on its lower left side shattered before the bullet embedded in the brick wall of the stairwell entrance. More shouts and cursing from the men, now whirling in her direction. But Selena flicked the safety back on the rifle, shouldered the weapon, and prowled for the stairs, little more than a shadow against the night. This time, someone would come looking. Hopefully, they'd want to play. Chapter 6. Luke had been surprised to see Alfred's name light up his cell at 3 a.m., mostly because they'd never once called each other, though Bruce had given Luke his butler's number in case of emergency, the sort that involved Bruce either never coming home again or needing a discreet pickup. Thankfully, Luke had never had to make a call, but if Alfred was calling, the call, like the man on the line, had been polite but firm.
"Hey, Alfred,"
Luke said, instantly awake and sitting up in bed.
"Good evening, Mr. Fox,"
came the dry British voice at the other end. Luke set his feet on the cool wooden floor.
"Is Bruce all right?"
Better to get down to business. Alfred, at least, seemed just as disinclined to make small talk.
"Yes, his mission is going well."
He knew the butler would say no more than that. Luke scanned the city skyline beyond his bedroom windows, struggling for the right response.
"Glad to hear it."
A lengthy pause. Luke winced a bit. But Alfred just said,
"Commissioner Gordon sent a message through the usual channels to say that he needs to speak to one of the bats flapping around this city."
Luke wasn't stupid enough to ask if the phrasing was Gordon's or Alfred's.
"Anything to worry about?" "The commissioner claimed that it was an urgent matter." That didn't sound good.
There was a private line between Gordon and the Batcave precisely for these sorts of situations, a line that now forwarded to Alfred's own inbox while Bruce was away on a mission of such secrecy that he hadn't even told Luke what he was up to. Their goodbyes were as quick as their hellos, and Luke had found himself relieved when the phone call was finally over. It had been a quiet night until now. Too quiet. He'd even headed to bed early for once. He certainly hadn't filled the night with a date with one of the women his mom was constantly trying to set him up with. No, he didn't date at all. Not when he was still climbing back toward the person he'd been. Not with all the responsibilities Batwing bore. And then there were the inevitable questions, along with the threat he'd pose to anyone associated with him if the truth about his identity ever came out. 5 minutes later, he donned the comfortable weight of his suit and slipped through the streets of Gotham City while a thunderstorm unleashed itself overhead. And now, as he dripped water onto the tiled floor of Gordon's dim office, the pale, middle-aged GCPD commissioner frowned up at him, his auburn mustache twitching, not at all surprised to see him emerging from the shadows.
"Good of you to join me."
Luke waited, his face hidden beneath his mask. The low light danced on the bluish silver of his armor, the bat symbol across his chest glowing faintly. Alive. The suit he wore hummed and ticked faintly with life, each inch of it made by Luke in that lab, designed and modified and tweaked to his liking, full of hidden surprises for Gotham City's worst.
"Where's the other guy?"
Gordon said at last, brown eyes narrowing beneath his thick-rimmed glasses.
"Haven't seen him around for a while."
Luke approached the desk, his suit clinking softly. Bruce had been the one to suggest the particular metal, his father the one to supply it.
"He's on a covert op."
No need to let Gordon know that he had little idea what it entailed.
"Is he now?"
Luke angled his head, the single sign of his impatience. Yeah, Bruce and Luke worked with Gordon, had an agreement to make sure the GCPD locked up the criminals they nabbed and provided backup when needed, but they didn't answer to the police. Luke himself still chafed when he had to work with the GCPD. What he'd seen just now, after slipping through the precinct's roof access, had only reinforced that sentiment. He'd nearly made it through the halls unnoticed when he'd spied the black kid, no older than 15, handcuffed to a bench in the corridor outside the holding area, soaked through, his clothes clinging to his thin frame. The kid's face was carefully blank, even if the tapping of his foot on the tile floor revealed the nervousness undoubtedly coursing through him, rightfully coursing through him, considering the words Luke heard a second later as he ducked into a shadowed alcove.
What'd you nab him for?
The question had come from an officer passing by. Unaware of Luke's presence mere feet away, the cop who had undoubtedly brought the kid in had answered, dabbing at the sweat on his ruddy face.
Pot possession. Caught in the act?
The first cop had asked, pausing. The ruddy-faced cop had smirked.
Does it make a difference?
The question, the cop's words, had Luke's blood roaring in his ears. His parents had explained to him from a young age that the world wasn't always fair, had explained how, regardless of their wealth, there was a very specific way he needed to interact with the cops. They had told him it was for his own protection, that sometimes the police got ideas in their heads that had nothing to do with him, but affected him anyway. Him and kids who looked like him. Like the kid on the bench. As Luke snuck another glance at the boy, he wondered if the kid had been taught the same. Luke emerged from the hall shadows and walked over to where the boy was seated. The cops, almost at the end of the hall now, halted, swore as they spotted him. He and Bruce never revealed their presence inside the precinct. Never. What would those officers say if they knew the color of the skin beneath his suit? It hadn't escaped Luke's notice just how many of the guys behind bars looked like him, but he knew the real criminals, the ones who truly posed a threat to Gotham City. Those guys didn't look like him at all. Luke had made sure to calm his raging heartbeat, the anger simmering in his veins, before he said to the kid,
"You good?"
Slowly, the kid's head lifted. He scanned Luke from head to toe, starting to shake a bit, his jeans dripping onto the floor, but he said nothing. So Luke asked again, signaling he was a friend, especially with the cops gawking and yet not daring to come closer.
"You good, bro?"
The boy still said nothing, but his eyes went wide, wide as saucers as the questions settled in. Luke gave him a slight nod. He turned to the cops at the end of the hall.
"Get this boy a blanket. He's soaked through."
The cops blinked at him, the ruddy-faced one's skin going white as death. Then he hurried away. Luke waited until he returned, blanket in hand, until it was around the kid's shoulders. Luke had marked the man's badge, his name and ID number, as he ran past, and as Luke finally left the hall, he dialed up one of the best lawyers in the city, who just so happened to be one of Luke's old prep school friends. She asked no questions, only promised to be at the precinct in 20 minutes. Luke was still trying to shake off the encounter, to steady himself, as he asked Gordon,
"Why not use the signal tonight?"
"Because it's gone."
Luke blinked, even though Gordon couldn't see it.
"Explain."
Gordon stiffened a little, the older man sweeping his sharp gaze over Luke. He'd stood in front of his own damn mirror enough to know how he appeared in the suit, more machine than man, especially with the eye lenses that glowed the same pale blue as the bat symbol across his chest. No sign of the human beneath, the way he preferred it. No way to guess who he was, who he loved. And against his enemies, the Jaws effect, he'd decided. It was way more petrifying not to get a glimpse of what lurked beneath the surface, to let the mind imagine the worst. Gordon laid a metal tray on his desk. An object rolled and hissed within its borders. A bullet.
"Someone shot it out tonight, right as we went to signal to you."
Luke approached the battered, paper-covered desk and plucked up the bullet.
"What was the crime they didn't want me involved in?"
Gordon's jaw tightened.
"We don't know for certain that they're connected, but the Museum of Antiquities was hit tonight. Someone stole an Egyptian cat statue valued at $1.3 million. We arrived within 5 minutes of the alarms going off, saw no trace, went to light up the signal, and then, out of nowhere, two shots fired, sniper style. One to the light, the other to the power source."
Luke held up the bullet to the light on Gordon's desk.
"I'd bet the burglary is tied to whoever stole the $500,000 in jewelry last week, and the 10-carat diamond from the Gotham Museum."
He rolled the bullet between his fingers.
But those two jobs were done without triggering an alarm.
Gordon removed his glasses and cleaned them on his askew tie.
And?
Luke opened a panel in his left arm, revealing the command pad of his suit. He punched in a few orders, and the lenses on his eyes shifted, magnifying the bullet in his palm, giving him a read of irregularities and dimensions.
And,
he went on,
tonight they triggered the alarms, and then left a calling card behind.
He lifted the bullet between two fingers.
Self-made, ID-less, sleek.
He dropped the bullet in the tray with a faint ping.
Fired by a far more elegant weapon than the usual suspects.
Gordon put his glasses back on.
It doesn't match any of the ammo used by the main gangs. Harley Quinn is skilled in ballistics. She's got a sniper's aim, but not access to this kind of ammo.
Luke nodded, and Gordon mused.
Poison Ivy doesn't use traditional weapons, and we haven't heard a whisper from the Riddler in months.
The man scratched his head.
You think someone new is in town?
Luke glanced toward the rain-lashed windows of the empty precinct office. He did.
A jewel and art thief. The first two crimes were in plain daylight. It's almost as if tonight's burglary.
He again picked up the bullet, weighing it in his hand.
Was there a way of saying that we weren't catching on fast enough, and they were dumbing the game down for our benefit?
Gordon finished. Luke snorted.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. He'd seen the reports on the thefts. No one harmed, just obscenely expensive things being stolen. And if they'd shot out the bat signal, then they knew precisely what sleeping dragon they were poking. Or sleeping bats, he supposed.
Can I take this?
Luke held up the bullet. Gordon adjusted his glasses.
Sure. We've run our tests. Keep it.
Gordon jerked his chin toward the door in silent dismissal. Luke bristled at the order, but leashed his temper.
And besides,
Gordon added, dragging a hand through his silver-streaked brown hair,
I'm not so convinced they wanted to get the attention of the GCPD.
Exactly. Dusty, long sleeping parts of his brain started to fire up. He'd been a ballistics expert overseas, and this bullet, this new thief, come find me, the bullet seemed to say. And maybe it was the lightning in the air, or the end of August heat, but Luke was inclined to take up the invitation. Selina leaned against the carved oak doorframe and watched the antiquities dealer jot down another calculation on his pad of paper. He'd been examining the Bastet statue for 20 minutes now, the golden lights of his ornate office dim, save for the spotlight of the examination lamp over the statue. She'd lingered at the doorway of his office for the entirety of that time, dressed head to toe in black, her face obscured by her death mask and the low-hanging hood of her sweatshirt. Such dramatics, the man had said when he let her in the back door. She'd said nothing, opting for the power of silence and the bullwhip hanging from her side to convey any threats she might need to make. It had been minimally difficult to find the dealer, even considering how so much of the antiquities market existed in murky zones of ownership. A statue stolen outright from the Museum of Antiquities was a different matter, of course, but she'd done her research, knew this man would find a way to make sure the statue vanished and money appeared in its place. The man at last lowered the loop from his eye, pulled off his latex gloves, and ran a hand over his bald, pale head.
Well, it's certainly real.
Selina crossed her arms over her chest, waiting. His dark, beady eyes narrowed.
You do realize I'll have a great deal of trouble hiding the trail if I'm to sell it. That sort of discretion won't come cheap.
Name your price.
Even with the helmet's voice modified, she kept her voice low, raspy. Her sister might have been the one who loved the theater, but Selina had picked up some tricks of her own these past few years. The man scanned the statue again, then her.
900,000.
It's worth far more than that.
I told you, discretion comes at a cost. There are ownership documents to forge, private methods of shipping to a buyer, Those things add up.
Selena didn't flinch.
I'll take 1.2.
The man straightened in his green leather seat.
You'll take 900, since you'll be hard-pressed to find another dealer who'd even touch a stolen item like this, especially one so publicly taken.
Another sweeping glance, as if assessing whether she had done the stealing or not. She didn't offer him any clues, only braced her feet slightly farther apart on the blue Aubusson rug and countered smoothly,
You'll be hard-pressed to find another piece like this anytime soon, since the Egyptian government has cracked down on the antiquities market.
The man interlaced his fingers and set them on the antique wooden desk.
1 million.
She met his stare.
1.2.
1 million, and that's the best you'll get.
Selena prowled toward the desk, her steps swallowed by the thick rug. She folded up the statue in its velvet wrappings and placed it into the slim wooden box she'd brought with her.
We'll see if the London dealers agree with that statement.
She turned on a heel and strode for the office door, beginning a silent countdown. 5, 4. She neared the arched doorway. 3, 2. She stepped 1 foot over the threshold.
Wait.
She made sure the money had been wired into the offshore account before she left the man's shop. It was more money than she'd ever dreamed of having, had never even considered having that much money. But it was still not enough, not for all the plans she'd crafted. Selena didn't immediately head back to her cold, clean penthouse. As if her feet had some magnet of their own, she stalked through the quiet, rain-slicked streets, keeping to the shadows. It wasn't hard. As she neared the slums, the streetlights became few and far between. It was in one of those pools of shadow that she finally stopped, gazing at the dark labyrinth of buildings ahead. There was no point in striding into the maze of streets of the East End, in going all the way toward that apartment complex. There was no one living there worth seeing anyway, and certainly no home left to visit. For a heartbeat, something in her chest tightened. Something that she'd buried down deep. The money, now in that offshore account, seemed to rise up and loom over her shoulders. What that money could do for so many dwelling here. What lives it might change, save. Later. That would all come later. This game was only in its opening movements, and there was much left to do. Still, Selena lingered on the edge of the East End for a while longer. Chapter 7. The next morning, Luke's dad picked up on the second ring. It was Friday, which meant Lucius Fox was currently sitting at his shiny CEO's desk in his shiny CEO's office, working on notes for Monday's board meeting before heading out early for a quick 9 at the club.
Luke,
his dad said by way of greeting. Walking through the private parking lot beneath his apartment building, Luke smiled. As he always did, likely always would, when he heard his dad's dry tone.
Morning, Dad.
He could practically hear his father taking a sip from his daily green smoothie. Brain food, his mom called it. She insisted his father drink one every day, and she tried to make Luke start, too, going so far as to buy him a juicer. He hadn't had the heart, or nerve, to tell her that in the 3 months since, he hadn't taken it out of the box. His dad asked,
Will I see you at the office today? On my way over now.
Luke unlocked his gunmetal Porsche 911 with a click of the key fob. He waited until he was sealed in the plush interior before saying,
I wanted to see if you had an hour or two free before you get too busy. New experiment?
He could also practically see his father sitting up in his leather chair. It had been an honor, and a much-deserved one, to have Bruce tap his dad to be CEO, but Lucius made little secret that his true passion would always lie in the applied sciences division. Luke set his phone in an empty cup holder, buckled his seatbelt, and switched the call over to the car's Bluetooth.
Unfortunately for you, no.
A long-suffering sigh. Luke grinned, revving the engine and backing out of his spot.
I've got a bullet that I need analyzed. Is that machine still there?
Might be a bit dusty, but it should be.
Good. Could you...
Already asking maintenance to have it sent to Seven.
What the people who worked in Wayne Industries saw when they entered Level 7, Luke knew his father paid them well.